The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by, and we have four still up with us. We have U.S. Wellness Meats. That's my good friend John Wood. That's www.grassfedbeef.com. Go out and talk to either John or anybody on his staff. They'll take good care of you. Like I've said before, his website is so easy to navigate through, and I think his service is second to none. And like I said, if you get the chance to speak to John, you couldn't meet a nicer guy. So go out and take a look at uswellnessmeats.com. Secondly, we got Saugerties Chiropractic Center. That's my guy, Mark Colligan. This is for the New York State area, upstate New York. Presently, they're rebuilding the website. So to get a hold of them, it's 845-246-5020. Obviously, he's got the drop table. He does soft tissue trigger points, deep tissue laser. He's doing the pulsed electromagnetic frequencies. And obviously, he deals a lot of sports injuries, and I'm dealing with some right now. And he's a great guy talking about, you know, what type of potential he's working with or who he's working with. And we're just waiting to get some Wi-Fi stuff straightened out with Mark. And Mark is going to be a regular, at least a minimum of once a month on Motivation and Muscle. This guy's a wealth of knowledge, and I know everybody out there really enjoy listening to him. And he's a great guy besides, and I've gone to him for over 10 years. So Saugerties Chiropractic Center, give him a call. Thirdly, we got another regular on here, Dr. William Wong. Supplements, you can speak to him about, obviously, any type of training. He does coach, and he's another guy like the other two that when you call, you will get a hold of him. If not, he will call you back. So go out to www.docspreferred.com. Dr. Wong and I just did a great podcast Friday, which I hope to go up, if not the end of the week, early next week. We've had some changes made, and we've had a few things we've had to address with the podcast. So it's all corrected now, but I am a little bit behind with things, but we will get caught up. So go out and take a look at Dr. Wong's essentials. And fourth is Atomic Athletic. That's our good friend Roger LaPointe, who's been on here with me since day one of the podcast show. He's got his safety, I call it super squat bar, but they call them safety bars. Regular $299 on sale for $225 plus shipping. And as he said yesterday, the way they break the shipping down, it might only cost you $14, $15. So go out to atomicathletic.com. Check it out. If you need to get a hold of Roger, same way. If you don't get a hold of him, he will return your call. And we only have people like that on this podcast because I don't want anybody that is not going to take care of those, especially that come to this show and listen and tell people. We want to take good care of everybody. And also, too, as I was telling our guest, which I will announce him in 1 second, I'm very much aggressive, and we're dominating the world today as far as I'm concerned. So today, every other week, we have our gentleman, and he is a gentleman. He's been around for over 45 years. Think about that, in this strength game, the iron game. He owns superstrengthtraining.com. This is none other than Bill Hinburn, who now, like I said, is on every other week, who I'm very proud he's on. I look forward to these gentlemen that have been around a long time because, as you know, we don't know everything, all of us, but I think Bill's pretty close probably, and I like learning from Bill, and Bill's a great guy to have on the show. So without further ado, and before I say Bill Hinburn, we're going to talk about today, which is real interesting. We're going to talk about how do you define strength, both physically, mentally, and spiritually. And I suggested this to Bill because I really want to get Bill's take on it. You know, when you've been in the trenches like he has for all this time, I think it's going to be a very interesting discussion. So, Bill Hinburn, I was going to call you Mr. Hinburn, but I figured you'd reach through and punch me in the nose. Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, sir.
Good afternoon, Eric. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here.
I won't reach through and punch you in the nose.
But I'm glad you're here, and you sound full of vim and vigor, because I told you offline I'm ready to roll. So just give a little bio on yourself, because I always like everybody to do that, and then we'll get right into the show.
I'm Bill Hinburn. I own SuperStrengthTraining.com. I'm a writer, publisher, distributor of serious, real-world, result-producing, no-nonsense strength publications. I have done this since the late 60s. Many of the publications that I suggest, everything on my site is the very best. It all brings something to the table. Otherwise, I wouldn't have it on my site. I have done this since, again, the late 60s through a mail order catalog, and then when the internet came along, a website. Just go to my website, superstrengthtraining.com, and you'll discover what I'm all about.
I'll tell you one thing, Bill. Whoever did your site did a nice job, too.
Thank you for it kindly.
It's like I was out looking at it a while ago, and it's got a good slideshow. Like one of the slides was 70 classic titles. It's nice and clean and organized, and it definitely reflects to you. There's no doubt about it. I like the older school stuff, but you got great colors and it really comes out at you because, one thing I've noticed with some of these sites, they're just so damn cluttered. You can't even make your way through them. And it's like, I leave when they're like that. So, you've got a nice clean site and it works. So, this is going to be fun. Let's get into, how do you define strength, Bill? I know we're going to go into a lot of ways, but what is your take on strength? I mean, you've been around a long time in this field, and you've seen trends come and go, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you try? I mean, I don't know if you can classify it, but just give me your take. What do you think?
Well, I think it's as you suggested for a topic, physically, mentally, and spiritually, I think it's a combination of all three. Mm-hmm. Naturally, physically, if you visualize an individual, say 6'4", 6'5", yep, big boned, 250, 300 pounds, you'll think automatically that they're strong. You'll become intimidated, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually perception over reality. I remember as a kid when I got in a few fights, and I saw people. I learned early on, especially with some, real big guys, far bigger than me, and I thought, well, this is going to be a long afternoon. Come to find out, I was astonished. There was no problem at all. The worst fight I ever had, the most unintimidating fight to begin with, was a fella that I'm average height. I'm 5'10". That's average, mm-hmm, average in America. Okay, for a male. Mm-hmm. This fella was about 5'6". Okay.
Yeah.
And we got in a physical brawl. I mean, it was a barn burner. Okay.
Yep.
And the typical afterward. It's how you settle things back in the day.
Yeah.
One of us, I think it was me. I had a black eye, and he had a split lip. Okay.
Yeah.
But of course, afterwards, as with all fights back in those days, you became fast friends. Okay.
Yes, you did.
Well, I asked him afterward, after this, we both had a tough time getting out of bed the next morning, put it that way. And I asked him, I said, man, you're a tough hombre. I said, how you do that? He said, I've got four older sisters. I said, wow, that explains it, because, the fairer sex or the so-called weaker sex, which is nonsense, they don't fight fair.
No.
I mean, a guy won't kick a guy when he's down normally, okay? Back in those days, you just didn't do that, okay? Well, I'll tell you what, there's hair pulling and everything else if you've ever watched the ladies fight. And, of course, they'll team up.
Yep.
You know, men bond, women network. You know, it's a matter of the pack mentality in many cases, it appears to me.
Yep.
But from a physical standpoint of view, you have the strength, you have the skill, whatever, as far as, let's say, fighting or strength demonstration, okay? Mm-hmm. However, it's a mental game in many cases. It's mind over matter. Excuse me. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you are right. As the great Henry Ford said that.
Yes, sir.
And if you put your mind to something and you say, you know, with absolutely an absolute relentless determination, failure is not an option, you know, the catchphrase.
Yep.
You can sometimes really surprise yourself, okay? For example, for years, the four-minute mile, nobody could break the four-minute mile, okay? Nobody. Yep. So everybody thought, well, a four-minute mile, it's impossible. Nobody's doing it, so I guess it just simply can't be done. For years. And a fellow by the name of Jim Ryan came along and broke the four-minute mile.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point is, shortly thereafter, you saw several people break the four-minute mile. Because in their mind, they said, and I'm just from my point of view, they probably thought, well, hey, if he can do it, it's not impossible. Therefore, it's a possibility, and it's within my capability. And so that's what went on. I think a lot of it is auto-suggestion. You suggest something to yourself. A lot of times you'll go into gyms, and many times you'll see in my newsletter that at the end I'll put a quote. Mm-hmm. And it's something inspiring, okay? And it's something to suggest that there's nothing impossible. It just may take a little longer, you know, that type of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into anything, you go into a gym, okay, and you'll see banners on the wall, you know.
Yep.
And these banners are, you know, for example, just do it, okay?
Yeah.
By one of the sneaker manufacturers. I think that it's important that you see something and you read it and you constantly focus on that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go in to do a squat, you're going to do a press, a deadlift, what have you. You'll see people walk up to the bar, okay, in a contest and everything, and you see them focus ahead. They take a deep breath. I see that the latest thing is to throw your hands straight up in the air and then swing down quickly, grab the bar, and lift. This is, in many cases, also, if you get into a groove where you do the same thing at the same time in the same way, kind of like a major league baseball pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
If you watch them for any length of time, they'll get up there, they'll pull their sleeve up, they'll have a chew in their cheek, and, you know, they'll adjust their hat, they'll pull up the other sleeve. You know, they'll hitch their shoulders and go into their routine, but it's exactly
the same.
Exactly the same each time. Watch a professional bowler. Same thing. They've got that mind hand groove that they're in every single time they do it. I don't want to say it's a superstition, but a lot of times people, you know, you'll hear people say, oh, I've got to wear this hat because, you know, it's my lucky hat or whatever. Okay.
Yep.
My comment on that is you might think it's funny, but it works for them.
Yes.
And also in martial arts, I knew, I had correspondence with the great Bruce Lee, near the end of the 60s. Several, you know, letters he just wrote out on a notebook. And he was very interested in hand strength, all types of strength, physical strength. He wasn't a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
But he was big on, especially for what he used, his purpose, of course, was martial arts. But he used functional strength, whatever worked. He cut his body weight, body fat down, quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And he was always interested in, for example, hands. He bought everything I had on hand strength magazine. He was big on Iron Man magazine. Perry Rader had it. And he would utilize that information to, perfect his craft.
Sure.
That, I think, he's been quoted many times. He has a lot of quotes that you'll see, but he was always thinking, and I'm not so certain what spirituality, I don't want to get into religion at all, but it was a spiritual connection, of course, from the Middle East, and, woven in with the mental and physical aspects of what he did. You take it a step further and to Europe, the old stage strongmen.
Yeah.
The trapdoor, the proverbial smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
It was entertainment. They were on the same wavelength and the same on the same marquee as magicians. So it was a form of entertainment. You know, you were going to wow the crowd. You know, you were going to get applause. During that particular time, they would tamper with things like they'd, get up on stage and they would have dumbbells or barbells or what have you, and they didn't weigh what they said they weighed and so on. Or they would tamper with horseshoes and the breaking of the chains and the decks of cards. Up until about 20 years ago, now this is interesting. Up until about 20 years ago, I believe that betting horseshoes, the horseshoe had to be tampered with. It had to be a special horseshoe.
Okay.
I couldn't believe in my mind that anyone could bend a horseshoe. I never saw it done.
Yeah.
Through a lot of the magazines, which is the media of the day, didn't say anybody broke any horseshoes, bending them. There was one gentleman by the name of Joe Greenstein, the Mighty Atom.
Adam,
he would bite through, chain links, and he would do his bending and stuff like that. And, he would also sell a variety of potions and stuff out of the back of his truck and stuff, stuff like that. And
he used toe stuff with his hair, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he held back, people pulling on the hair. But, again, he was a performer. He was trying to make a buck, and I don't blame him for that. It was the times. He grew up through tough times. But the point is, everybody rallied around him and thought, wow, he can do this and he can do that. And I didn't think much of it until this crowd, and I refer to them as the modern day strongmen. And I know several of them, until they started actually bending horseshoes, tearing decks of cards, several decks of cards in many cases.
Yep.
Breaking chains, bending coins. See, that was another thing, the bending of the coins. The European strongman. Well, there's a variety of different metals and sizes used for their currency over there in their coins. Okay. So when you say bend a coin, well, what is the footprint of the coin? Is it an inch across? Is it like our dime? Is it thin?
Yep.
What is it made out of? Our pennies today are not solid copper. They're,
they're
copper-clad zinc.
Yep.
Okay. And the bending of the coins over there and biting through them and stuff like that, I couldn't really, I was always I was the resident cynic when it came to a lot of that stuff, because I knew they were performers. They would get up on stage and, they would take a deck of cards and they would cook them in an oven. Okay. That's what they did. Well, today I know several guys that will bring for example, I have on my desk before me, a 10-inch adjustable forged steel wrench bent in a U shape by my good friend Dennis Rogers, and he personally autographed the handle. And the reason he could do that is because the handle was dipped in a special rubber when the after the wrench was manufactured for the comfort of the mechanic or what have you. Well, the other thing is, it's good that that's on there because it demonstrates that the wrench was not tampered with. It was not annealed, which changes right. which changes the physics of the metal. No. You can actually make it a lot softer. So it wasn't tampered with. But anyway, it's bent in a U shape. Now, if you know or have heard of Dennis Rogers, today he weighs probably about, I believe he told me about 160, 65 pounds, something like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. But his story is really unique as to how he actually discovered his strength. And I honestly believe, after talking to him on several occasions, that it is a combination, in his case especially, although he's very strong, it's a combination of physical, mental, and spiritual strength.
Yes.
That he could do this. He told me that he discovered his strength, his unusual strength, when he was a kid. He was helping his father unload a truck with heavy carpeting, and it was rolled up, real heavy carpeting. And they were pulling it out, and they were both working pulling it out, and he had the front end of it, okay? And they're pulling on it, and he pulled it, and he had that end, and he walked towards this, he walked back up towards the center of it, and he was pulling on it, and he was carrying it, and he thought his father had the other end.
Oh.
He looked back, and there was no one there.
Yeah. That's strength.
And he surprised himself. Remember what I said earlier? Sometimes you surprise yourself. He surprised himself, and he's discovered, wow, I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, once you know you can do something, you know, then from then on, it's not that difficult because you have the perception of yourself that you can do it. And, you know, it's just like the bumblebee. According to aerodynamic type engineers and what have you, it's impossible for the bumblebee to fly.
Yeah.
But their standing joke is, don't tell the bumblebee. You know, it's from our standpoint of view. I think that the horseshoes, and I watch guys nowadays bend these horseshoes, and earlier than 20 years ago, I thought they had to be tampered with. Many of the guys will bring to the stage a wrench that is in bubble wrap.
Nice.
So you know, and they pass it around. Here's the wrench. You know, it might be chrome plated. It may not be. It didn't make any difference. Forged steel, tempered, and they'll pass it around. They get it back. They take the wrapping off, and they proceed to bend it. Same way with decks of cards. Okay. They'll be in the small carton and shrink wrapped. Mm-hmm. Pass it around. There it is, brand new. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They'll take it back. Take the cellophane off. Take them out of the little carton.
Yeah.
And proceed to tear them. You know, tear the whole deck. Sometimes twice. You know, double decks. And stuff like that, or bending of re-rod, okay? Bending of steel bars. You know, I'm fascinated with it because, like I say, over 20 years ago, you didn't see any of that.
Yeah, I know.
And I think this is very important for the future of strength, and these feats of strength, that there are several people, and many of them are mentors. You know, the Mighty Adam was a mentor for Slim the Hammer Man Farman.
Sure.
The Sledgehammer King.
And
he was a mentor to Dennis Rogers. He was a mentor to many guys. Pat Povilaitis.
Yep.
You know, he has a fascinating show where he lifts engine blocks and at the same time squeezes those heavy, grip.
Fire cut.
He'll tear decks of cards at the same time he's got this engine block.
Yeah, he uses Iron Mind's neck harness. That's what he's got, I believe.
He uses
We're trying to get him on the show, by the way.
Oh, he's a great guy. I've been to his home. I've seen him several times at his performances. It's phenomenal what he can do, especially when you discover that he's got a steel rod down his back. And his
back, yeah.
He's just a great guy. But he's an example, okay? And there's several other guys. I mean, I could list them, but Steven Weiner, he's another one. These guys are phenomenally strong. David Whitley, okay, the Iron Tamer. He's another one.
Yep.
Great guys. And you know, they're not all full of themselves. They'll tell you, you know, it's just a lot of practice. I couldn't do it in the beginning, you know. It was, you know, and I just kept at it. But the beauty of it is they have several people that are learning from them. So they're mentoring, and this is spreading. And there's a lot of fellas out there that are, you know, learning how to do this stuff. Bending of the, you know, you have benders, you have breakers, lifters, you know, they all have their specialty and what they do. And I think that's marvelous. But it's important to know that you have to separate the entertainment from the actual feats of strength or competition. You know, it's you know, if you go to a powerlifting meet, you know, you have, it's all official. The equipment is weighed and everything. So this is official. And when it goes into the record books, it goes in there as official.
Yep.
You know, in the days of Sandow and Saxon, again, or Thomas Inch.
Yep.
It was performance. Okay. Yep. And they would, you know, there'd be somebody out on the stage that would, that would take them up on their $10,000 offer to duplicate any feat of strength that they do, and so on, and the crowd goes crazy and all that stuff. But you have to know that it's more important from a stage performance standpoint of view that the people are entertained, they enjoy it, they go home, and they're going to spread the word and come back and see their act again. It was how they made their living. It's the difference between competitive sports and recreational sports. You know, one, you're having fun. The other one, hey, we're going to set a record, you know.
Yeah. Well, we've had Jeff Bankins on before. I'm sure you're familiar with him. I mean, I love it. He does a lot of that and blows the hot water bottles up and explodes them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I love what. And then we had – because we had Mike Bruce on here
Mike the Machine.
Mike the Machine, and he's the one who said he gave me, you know, Pat's name and David Whitley's name, and I just reached out to Pat the other day, but you know, he was the guy. Was it Mike Dayton that hung himself? I mean, he was the second guy, right, to do that, Mike.
Well, here, it's funny you bring that up. Yeah, you know, you're every time you mention a name, boom, I can think of, you know, three or four other people.
Yeah.
He's not the first, okay?
Okay.
Dayton first came on the scene. It was Mr. America, and then it escapes me. But he was the handcuff king. He was the guy who could snap regulation handcuffs, hold back airplanes, and stuff like that. Yes, he had a course. In fact, at one time I distributed a course. It was a key course, CHI, key. And you know, that was an excellent course, mind over matter. Okay.
Yeah.
It was in a big green notebook affair, you know, and had all the pages, you know, punched and in there. And nice photographs of him demonstrating everything. And there was, as you could tell by the name, it had a Middle Eastern spiritual, you know, connection with the martial arts and what have you. So, but he was not the first to do
hanging.
Farmer Burns. Martin Farmer Burns, who was a world champion wrestler back around 1900, he was the mentor for the great Frank Gotch, who was world champion.
And then you had Matt Fury take them both after that.
Yeah, but the whole thing with Martin Farmer Burns, he had a wrestling school and everything. I've got his course around here somewhere in his autobiography. But the thing was, he would hang himself.
Yeah,
he had a real thick neck. Okay, real thick. And he was a wrestler, so there was very little, you know, it was all functional strength and what have you.
Sure.
And that was back in Catch as Catch Can. I mean, it was ruthless wrestling. It isn't like this staged choreography that we have in today. I mean, these guys would wrestle for hours and hours, you know, and it was wrestling was the sport back then. Frank Gotch and Farmer Burns, they were George Hackenschmidt of Europe. He was world champion. Okay.
Can I ask you a question, too? Was the Great Gamma around in that era, or was that later on?
Great Gamma was around in that area, and everybody, without exception, stayed clear of that guy.
That dude, I tell you, you want to talk about a physique? Holy God, man. That guy, I pound for pound, I think I read his max weight was maybe 260.
Uh-huh.
I think to this day, I mean, I've seen some athletes with thick legs. You got to look at a picture of that guy. His legs were like unbelievable, the size of them, and they had shape and everything. I was like, I mean, that guy was, yeah. I thought, I wasn't sure if he was that era or not.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I mean, he was somebody you didn't want to screw around with, obviously, right?
Well, he was, everybody steered clear of him.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he would offer, and he wouldn't back down from anybody. He'd offer to rest. But you see, here's another thing. Back then, okay. You had the, for example, with Frank Gotch or Farmer Burns, they would travel, especially Burns, Frank Gotch, he would travel to mining towns, rough mining towns, and he would say, hey, I'm going to wrestle, you know, and I'm the toughest guy around and all that stuff, you know. It's like John L. Sullivan. He would walk into a pub and say, hey, I'm the toughest SOB in the house, you know.
Yep.
And right away, everybody would say, you know, this is bare knuckle days, you know, and everybody, you know. Yeah. And John L. Sullivan was a strong man before he was a boxer.
Boxer, yeah.
You know, they call him the great John L., the Boston Strong Boy, okay?
Yep.
And but that's what they did back then. And they would have round after round after round, bare knuckle, and just beat each other half to death. But there would be wagers. See, there was a lot of money at stake in this stuff, okay? You know, same way with Frank Gotch. He would go to these mining towns or some tough hombres, and he would wrestle anybody that would step up to the plate. One guy had one eye, Tom Jenkins.
Yep.
Who later coached wrestling at the West Point Academy. Okay.
Yeah,
he was a tough hombre, and you know, and when they got down in there wrestling, I mean, they'd when the ref wasn't looking, they'd get in there and they'd do all sorts of crazy things, you know, out your eyes out and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
But they would go on forever with their wrestling, and you know, the winner takes all and that stuff. And Frank Gotch made a very good living at it. But getting back to the Hangman, demonstration. Farmer Burns had a very thick neck, and he would take a 6-foot drop in the Hangman, Hangman noose, okay? And he would do that on occasion. Mike Dayton, I'm not taking anything away from Mike Dayton, okay?
No, I know.
But he was not the first, okay? Now, Mike Dayton had that course I mentioned, okay? He also had another course that would show you how to take withstand a Hangman's drop. Well, he had to take that off the market shortly thereafter because my God, the liability would go through the roof. But anyway, he would do that. Now, I don't know. I can't remember because I saw pictures. I've never seen any film clips of him doing it.
And
I don't recall. I wouldn't swear to it that it was a Hangman's drop where he would actually drop. It may have been just withstanding the rope. I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that. But yeah, he did that, and of course, snapping of the regulation handcuffs and stuff like that. Now you see the overlapping here. I'll bring up the great Eric Weiss, aka Harry Houdini.
Yep,
okay,
yep.
The great magician of the 20th century. He was an escape artist more than a magician, and he would do a number of things. Again, it was perception over reality, handcuff king and stuff like that. He was a powerful man, very, very strong, small stature, not very tall. I think he was only about 4 foot, I'm sorry, 5 foot four, you know, something like that. But he would do things like he had little handcuff keys, little lock picks and stuff like that, that he would have in his mouth. And he would also, when he ever, there were many times he would put a straitjacket on, and he could hold his body in such a way that it would give him room when it was time to, you know, escape from that. He did a number of things, and he was extremely strong, you know, almost like a contortionist to get out of some of the, you know, situations that he was in. You had, it was entertainment is what I'm trying to get across to you. You can't, any of these strongmen of the day, you know, it's just like the modern magicians, you know, you, I think it's David Copperfield, and there's another, there's another fellow that is a good friend of my good friend, Dennis Rogers. You've undoubtedly seen him on television where he can do all sorts of magic, and it's just unbelievable stuff. But the whole point is people love to be fooled. And you could see the parallel between magic and, you know, feats of strength. They want to be wowed. They want to be fooled. You know, they want sensationalism. You know, when you turn on the news, they're not going to tell you that, you know, so-and-so did a good deed. That's not going to get your attention. They want to know who, you know, who held up a bank and all the bad news, viruses and everything else. But my point is, at the time that all this went down, you didn't have television. So you had a stage, and the stage invariably had a flat, had a trap door. The lighting was a certain way. You had the curtains, and you had the drama. They would always have the build up to a feat of strength. They would get you. They would get you excited, And again, the lighting had a lot to do with it. As to, and of course, the, you know, somebody could say, well, that dumbbell weighs 300 pounds, maybe it weighs 100 pounds, but they're saying it weighs 300 pounds, so, or 200 pounds, whatever you want to believe. Okay. And they used to put it on there with, you know, white paint and stuff like that. Carrying a pony across the stage where there was wires, again, the lighting. And the curtains and everything, if unless you were really, really close, you couldn't see that. But then unless it's suggested to you, you know, the eye sees what the mind wants.
Absolutely.
And that's important to keep that in mind whenever you see these feats of strength. I've seen the various horseshoes that the fellas use today. There's different kinds. The same way with the nails, there's different you have to be a metallurgist to figure out what they're what they're made of, and the steel bars, the length is important. What they put on, they usually use a leather wrap, you know, to bend on. They have a they use a certain position, and if you watch, I call them benders. Any of the benders, do their particular feats, they always do it exactly the same way. They're very methodical in how they start out. They wrap it, they hold it up in front of everybody, and then they start, and they, you know, they'll start on their leg or what have you, and usually wind up when they get it, you know, get a break in the steel, and they get it to about a 60-75 degree angle. Then they'll put it down between their legs with the additional help from their legs and squeeze it. I've seen some guys take a, say, for example, rerun, a long bar, and they'll fashion it down between their, you know, very precarious position. I'm not so sure I'd want to try it. They get it down in there, and they start to bend. But everybody has their own way of doing it, and in many cases, it depends on their bone structure. You know, a tall person, just like lifting, a tall person will have a different approach than, say, a short fella. You know, like the old saying, you never want to get in a contest, a push-up contest with a short guy, a short Hercules.
Absolutely.
He has a mechanical advantage, It's just like a deadlifter if he has long arms and short legs or a short torso. Or a guy that that presses weight. If he has long arms, he's going to be in trouble. He has short arms, again, mechanical advantage.
You know what, Bill? There's two things I want to say. Number one is what interests me more. I love all that bending, and I think we've talked off air. Like I'm looking to get into like back lifting now. This won't be probably till. It depends when we can build it. It could be the end of the year. It could be early next year. I'm kind of going back to pulling those big Queen Mary chains. I'm still going to lift stones, and I want to get to Scotland next year. But I'll tell you what I'm very interested in. I want to start lifting anvils by the horns. That interests me big time. And I mean, I know they're very expensive. You know, I go whenever I see garage sales, especially if I'm out more in the country, I always stop and hope that I'm going to find something there like that. That really interests me. And then second, the question I got here for you, because you've met so many people, talked to so many people, been around the game for so long. Let's just go from a stature point without even, you know, we can get into that more if you want to. Who have you met or seen in print in all the years you've been in this business that you felt was the most imposing human being you've ever met, as far as from a structural outside standpoint, whether it's a lifter, a bender, an Olympic lifter, or a stone guy? I mean, and maybe you can't concentrate it down to one, but even if you gave me three, who in your life have you met that you felt was like, holy cow, this guy is better than I thought he was, or somebody that you felt was maybe not what you thought, and then you met him in person, it was totally different? Is there anybody that comes to mind with that?
Well, as far as being impressed, yeah, it takes a lot to impress me, okay?
I know that.
I've seen a lot of these guys out there.
Yep.
All things considered, okay? Yeah. And age, of course, is one of them.
Yep.
And a combination of his physique from a visual standpoint of view and his performance, I would have to say Sigmund Klein.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, he was up in years when I met him. In fact,
yep,
I met him in person. I had contact with him a few years prior, but I met him just a few months before he closed his gym in Times Square in New York City.
Yep.
And you have to keep in mind that he was about 70 years old.
Holy cow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I met him. I went to his gym. Times Square, which back then in 1972, it was September of 72. It was a bad area.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to take a gun with you to the bathroom. It was so bad. It was bad. Okay. You know, guys sitting around, wine and all that stuff. And it was just bad, seedy area, dirty. It's cleaned up since then. But nevertheless, he was up on the top floor, was where his gym was. So I went up the stairway and knocked on the big door. And I hear a voice on the other side. It says, Klein's gym. I knew it was Klein because I had talked to him on the phone several times.
Yeah, sure.
He recognized his voice. Always talked very slow. And I said, Klein's gym, may I help you? And I said, yeah, this is Bill Hinburn, and I'd like to come and pay you a visit. And I hear the lock mechanism and all this stuff, and he opened up the door. And it was like taking a step back into time. Okay. He with his gym and the globular bells and all the photographs, his huge Stein collection and what have you, a huge carpet on the floor. You had to take your shoes off. But anyway, there he stood. Okay.
Wow.
And, he was from the neck down. He looked like he was in his 20s.
Okay? Wow.
He had a t-shirt on and he had the, you know, the sleeves, kind of like rolled in. So, there was no sleeve showing. He had a white t-shirt. He had pleated dark trousers and a thick, a wide, a black belt. And I could see his abdominals through the t-shirt.
Holy God.
Yeah, I could see faintly the lines. In other words, there was no fat on this dude.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, hell yeah.
And he just looked at me and I said, how do you do, Mr. Klein? I'm Bill Hinburn. And he says, oh, how are you? Come on in. And, you know, we talked for a little while and He said to me, Hinburn, that's German. I said, well, yeah, my father's side is from Prussia. Well, he was born in Königsberg, Prussia.
Holy cow.
And my family, of course, that doesn't exist. Prussia doesn't exist anymore. It's kind of like, right. It's kind of like a Russian, I guess, something like that, Eastern Bloc area. I'm not really sure. It could be Poland for all I know. But anyway, so he smiled right away. And, I'm looking around in the gym, and I said, wow, you have quite a Stein collection. He says, are you interested in Steins? And I told him my grandfather had a Stein, you know, a beer Stein that he that he gave me. Well, the horses were off then. We didn't even talk about weight training at that point. And he took me over in an office, and he had a few Steins in there. And he opened up a drawer, and he had this Stein. It was all wrapped in paper, okay, and it was damaged. And before the end of the day, he gave me that Stein, which I still have. I had it repaired.
Wow.
But nevertheless, I still have it. All of his Steins had a strongman motif in something. Because he collected Metlock Steins and what was referred to as 4F, okay?
Yeah.
Turnovarians, which was a big gymnastic renaissance in Germany at the time around the turn of the century.
Okay.
And all of them were like that. And he told me how to, he said, do you know what the word Stein means? And I said, no, I'm not. I really don't know much about them. You know, he says, Stein is stone. Okay. And he says, you know the difference between a mug and a Stein? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't think a mug has a lid. He says, you're right. A Stein always has a lid. You know why the lid is on a Stein? I said, no, I don't know that either. You know, I mean, just a lot of information. Yeah. He says, well, during the Black Plague in Europe, they thought that the plague was
airborne. Probably.
Airborne. So if they, they're not going to give up their beer, naturally. So they would put a lid on there, and they would always keep the lid closed. They felt that would keep out the plague. And he says, if you turn over the Stein at the bottom, it will tell you a number of things. It's the history of the Stein and what have you. I found it fascinating. I mean, he had Steins that were like 2 or 3 feet tall.
Wow.
Smaller ones. Oh, yeah. And he would, he says, I collect them. If you ever hear anybody that has any 4F or Metlock Steins or any strongman motif on them, please let me know. And then we walked around the gym, and I looked at the original Sandow Roman column, not to be confused with a Roman chair. This was a column. It was like a 3-inch pipe that was fastened with a flange on the floor to the ceiling. It also had a flange there, so it was a solid pipe, and it had a couple of cross bars on it where you would climb up there, and you would hook your legs and hang upside down and do abdominal raises. Put your arms behind your neck and do that. And he said that was in the corner of the gym near the window. And you have to remember that he inherited the gym from Professor Attila, who was Eugen Sandow's manager at one time. But anyway, I saw many of the Sandow statue. Which I eventually got from him, about a year later. And he also had globular bells, chrome. He had French block weights. He had huge 14, I think there were 14 by 20 photographs in oak frames all around the gym near the ceiling. And then underneath there was a shelf where he had his Steins, and he had smaller photographs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't too many.
Not to interrupt. What do you think happened to all that stuff? I mean, do you know, like with his globes and Stein, do you know how they all kind of were redistributed once he got out of the gym and obviously left this world? Do you have any idea where a lot of that stuff is, if it is around?
It's hard to tell. I would like to think that some of it is still around, but the people are talking about it. You know, it's just like some of the stuff I have. I don't talk about it because I don't want to attract too much attention.
No, I got you. I got you.
But
Definitely.
Know, anything that I mention is you know, common knowledge. But the thing is, every once in a while I hear some saber rattling about somebody that has, you know, something from the gym. It's just like a lot of the stuff from York Barbell Company, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You would think that they would have a lot more than they do. Unfortunately, if you walk in, you know, walk through the museum,
yeah,
that's about it. They don't, you know, a lot of the stuff kind of like grew legs and walked away. But you're talking a business that's, you know, been established since the early 30s. You know, so that's an awful lot of time for a lot of this to happen.
Well, that's what, like I always tell you, I stop all over places like that because you know what, Bill? Just when you find a beautiful antique car that's been covered there for 50 years and they don't want jack for it, I'm just hoping one of these days someone opens those wooden garage doors and I look in and it's like, oh, voila. You know, it's like everything I've always wanted is sitting there they want to sell. You know, and that to me, I mean, that's like hitting $1 billion right there because, you know, you've read about this stuff. We talk about this stuff. Some of this stuff people own, obviously, but I've got globes from York that I bought from Roger years and years ago. I think they're 90s and 100s. They're not perfect, but I always say, hey, you know what? Maybe Grimmick or Tommy Kono or somebody had their hands on these things.
Oh,
so, you know, I love stuff like that. I you know, and getting to where we're talking about this strength and this spirituality and you know, physically just and mentally being so put together with this. I think that, you know, when you're talking about, you know, about different things here and there in the beginning, it was like this is what always struck me. Like when I got those globes, I was like, you know, I don't lift them like I used to mainly because I don't want to chip them up. I mean, once in a while I'll pull them out and just press them because I want to do it. But it's the same way like when I went to Iceland and grabbed the Húsafell stone. It was like there's just something about that when you grab these things and if you mentally think about the other people you feel, I know some of the people that have grabbed the stone I'm talking about,
right.
But I really don't know who touched those implements. I'm just going by my beliefs. It's like I think that can carry you further sometimes than anything. I mean, we like doing rehearsals. We all do it. We set up goals. We believe certain things, and your beliefs are going to really dictate at times, you know, where we're going. I mean, that's a given and a fact. But I'll tell you one thing, nothing is more encouraging to me or gets me more mentally in tune is when I say, hey, you know something, if John Grimmick pressed these, I'm going to press them too, you know, because I'm a big believer they laid their DNA. If they sweat, their DNA's on it, all right? So it's the same way with the stone. Those are things that I use to kind of trick me a little bit. And I don't mean trickery where it's like, you know, I put the pressure on myself. Look, if they did this, you can do this. Now, like you said in the beginning, it might not be today, but maybe it's a year down the road. But you got to work your butt off, and you got to get to that point. And that's where I think this stuff is so vital to, you know, becoming whatever you do, whatever you feel is a champion to you. You don't necessarily have to be in WSM this week with the guys. You could be in your backyard saying, you know what? This is the first time I've ever pressed a 100-pound globe, all right? That's a big thing because, you know, I see too many things out there that they make it sound like, oh, 100 pounds is nothing. Everybody's doing it. I got news for you. Not everybody's doing it. It's all BS, man. There's just so many things out there that aren't true.
Well, yeah. You know, getting back to what you said about the globular bells and you know, stumbling across something and, you know, hitting the mother load, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's
a funny
thing. I was back in the 80s, I think it was, I was out about with a family, and we went to one of these big antique shows, okay?
Okay,
they had seven big barns, huge barns. I mean, these things were astronomical, like a dirigible hangar, okay?
Yeah.
And we're walking through there, and the people had all their displays and everything, you know, tables, and they had stuff on the ground, you know, and the straw and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, look at all this old stuff. And it's, you know, just ancient furniture and glassware and everything. So I'm stumbling along there. And I look underneath the table and I see I knew what it was. It's a Milo duplex kettlebell.
Oh, my God.
Well, it had a big question mark on it.
Yeah.
Somebody drew a big question mark on it in a black indelible ink type
marker.
Yeah, marker. And I'm looking at that, and I motioned the guy over. I said, you know, I didn't want him to know that I knew what it was.
Exactly, yeah.
I said, what do you got there? And he says, I don't know. That's why I got a question mark on it. You know what it is? I said, yeah. He says, what is it? I said, well, how much do you want for it? He says, I'll only sell it if you tell me what it is. And I thought, well, this could go sideways real quick. Because if I give him too much information, he's going to think, well, you know, the price is going to go up. I said, well, I'll tell you what it is. It's a kettlebell. Mm-hmm. He said, what is a kettlebell? He says, it doesn't have a spout. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, I was giggling to myself, not at him, but only because of his ignorance. I said, well, it's an exercise weight, and it was manufactured in the early 20th century. You had a barbell, you know what that is. Yes, oh, yeah. It's a long handle between two globes. You had that, and then you had a dumbbell, which was a short handle between two globes, and then you had a kettlebell, which had a bail handle on top. There's your kettlebell. It was manufactured by a fellow named Alan Calvert, Milo Barbell Company. You can see it written on the top. He said, and he didn't notice that, see?
Yeah.
I said, it's cast in the top hemisphere near the where the handle goes through.
Yep,
he said, okay, $50.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You got to run when you do that.
I did. And unfortunately, I was glad I had $50 in my pocket. He grabbed the money, and I grabbed the bell. And I was very thankful. I said, I gave my name and phone number. I said, if you come across any more of this, you know, drop me a line. But that was a story. And that's and I still have the kettlebell, and it still has the question mark on the front. So it's a story behind it, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, and it's the same way with like the old books, like you collect and stuff. I'm always, and I've gone to a few like old bookstores and I found a few things here and there, but I'm always hoping I go to somewhere and just find boxes of stuff.
Well,
that,
see,
you know,
that's the other thing. You have to remember, I started collecting when very, very few people collected. You didn't have the benefit of the internet. And you didn't have the explosion of strongman and stuff like that. And I knew a lot of the old timers, and they had huge collections. And either they, they decided to sell them while they were alive, or when they passed, you know, the widow would contact me or a relative and say, "Hey, come pick this stuff up. You know, we have no use for it, no interest or whatever."
Yep.
And so I got a lot of stuff that was, you know, I still have it personally autographed by Jowett, Calvert, McMahon.
Yep.
Grimmick, you name it, and I have a lot of their possession. They actually had it in their possession. I've given a lot of stuff away over time too to people that, you know, dear friends and stuff like that.
Yep.
Then I feel that they would appreciate it, you know. And of course, you know, they fall through their shoes when that happens. But the whole point is, yes, there is a certain connection. It's not just a tangible item and not just a physical, so much iron and paper, so to speak, as if there is a story behind it and there is a connection that only a person in the iron game would appreciate, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I try to perpetuate this, is because what's going on today, I can't connect with it, okay? But
no,
I think a lot of fellas that if they're coming up and they discover what many, as far as bodybuilding, for example, the golden era, which many people feel is the 60s and the or early 70s and what have you, power lifting, Olympic lifting, when you had three lifts back in the 40s and 50s when the United States was, you know, world leader. And, you know, 40s and 50s and stuff like that, when what I feel a lot of the physiques and the lifts were attainable naturally. Okay.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I'm very anti-steroid. I don't care who knows it. Performance-enhancing drugs. You know, people will talk about it. I don't want to go off on a subject like this, but unless they are prescribed at the very least, under a professional, and I mean a medical doctor, an internist, under his care and used accordingly, I think you're a fool to entertain the use of it, especially when people will they're a controlled substance now and they're passing it around. That's illegal to pass to say, hey, try one of these. You can't do that. That's illegal. That's trafficking. Yep. You cannot do that. Okay.
You get caught with a needle. That's a felony.
Well, here's the thing, though. A lot of people will get a prescription, let's say. And they have the pills in their hot little hands or whatever they're going to use. Well, the old mentality, if a little bit's good, more has got to be better. Now you're going off the charts. You're not using it as directed. I'm not singling out performance-enhancing drugs, and I notice I didn't say steroids because this this umbrella includes human growth hormone, HGH, insulin, diuretics, any of this stuff. If it's as powerful as everyone believes and is led to believe, then you got no business using it other than the way it is prescribed by a professional. And I don't mean picking up information off the internet and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, these Yahoos don't know what they're talking about. You know, they hear something and they just simply pass it on. It's not good. It's bad. Okay. If you're going to entertain using this stuff, for heaven's sake, use it with a under the care of a physician, because any medication can be misused. Hey, take a bottle of aspirin and see what's happening.
Oh yeah.
You know, you may tear out the lining of your stomach. And I'm talking a lot of over-the-counter stuff, okay?
Sure.
If the wrong person takes it, they have a severe allergy. You know, some people are allergic to codeine and stuff like that. They find out the first time, and, you know, they don't do it again. But that's just my point of view. And that's why I perpetuate the old-time strongmen. Years ago, the stuff today, the what few competitions are left – I don't approve of it. It's just, it's not me.
Well, I said this on another show one time. It wasn't that long ago. I think the best thing for what we like to do, and I think it's going to eventually do it because you're seeing more and more of the stuff that's coming out, you know, like CrossFit, there's talk now, there's other stuff people want to do. So, you know, that eventually will go on the wayside. It might still be there, but whatever. I think the best thing for, especially like I like to do in the rack and being outside and lifting stones, I'd like to see it go back underground again. But this time, when it resurfaces, it's like there's so many people that the word got out to. It isn't going to be like, it's going to be new to people that have never seen it, but there's going to be just so many people now that are going to be attached to it. And obviously, the way you do things, the way I do things, the way a lot of other people carry on that have been doing this stuff and believe in it, it might be the best thing that could ever happen with this whole thing. And I, you know, I got into this with one of the people we had on the other day. This is something that I believe in totally. I mean, obviously, you've experienced it and are experiencing it. Name anything out there, and I don't even know. I don't want to really classify weightlifting as a sport because then it equates it with everything I'm going to talk about, and I think it's far better by a long shot. How many things can you do in your 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s? You make 100. You can still lift barbells. I mean, unless you've had some serious physical injury, how many things out there? Can you play baseball? Maybe. Can you play football? Absolutely not. You're not going to see anybody do it. All right, basketball, forget it. Gymnastics, forget it. Hockey, forget it. But guess what? The thing that people haven't embraced totally, in my opinion, and I hope we can get everybody into this, especially the younger kids with the obesity problems now, the barbell. Still the best, and I'll repeat, I still think it's the best piece of steel ever made, perfected, and used, because there's nothing simpler than a barbell, and the barbell can do anything you want with it. And that's my hope, Bill, for everything at this point, really.
Well, an adjustable plate loading, a set of barbells and dumbbells
dumbbells.
Is you know, 110 pound set. There you go. So what do you pay? $50-$60 for it? I don't know. I haven't purchased a brand new barbell, and well, I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's going to be over $100, but still.
Yeah, okay, $100, but you have to understand, okay. It has a shelf life of 10,000 years, you know, let's say, okay? you know, I can accept the fact that it will rust because of oxidation. I can't accept the fact that it will collect dust, okay? These barbells are like Bibles. Most people have them, few people use them, okay? It's like kind of like a status symbol or whatever, but here's the key to it. Your competition is no one else but yourself.
Yep.
And that is key to understanding what it's about. Like you said, you can lift, you can lift weights or barbells. People right away will think, well, no, how can you do that? You know, they're thinking of, you know, when you were in your 20s and you were doing 300 or 400 pound bench press. No. Pick up the dumbbell. Okay, if it's a little too heavy, take a few plates off. You know, don't beat yourself up. You're not trying to impress anybody. Leave the ego hanging on the door before you come in, you know.
Yeah.
And this is the key, and progression is the key, okay? You do more today than you did yesterday to be stronger tomorrow. And when I say more, I don't mean volume. I mean add ever so slight increments in weight. Yeah. Add a repetition, tighten up your form, gradually have a workable plan. Get a calendar and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I want to, say, improve my bench press by 100 pounds between now and the end of the year.
Right, exactly.
That's a big chunk.
Yep.
I wouldn't suggest it. I would go back, and if you're ever going to do this in a year, let's say, if you're going to lock your time for a year, do 50 pounds.
Yep.
Okay, now break that up into weeks and days. Say you train twice a week. Okay, and I'm not talking about a kid. I'm talking about somebody in their 50s or 60s and beyond, okay?
Yep.
Twice a week, okay? 2 days of rest in between, okay? Now, there's 50, say 50 weeks in a year, okay? 52.
Yep.
50 weeks in a year.
Yep.
Times two. That's 100 days. 100 exercise periods. Okay? Now, divide that 50 pounds by 100.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you add each time.
Yep.
You know, these biting off huge chunks. Oh, I'm going to add another 10 pounds. And then next week, I'm going to add another 10 pounds. Well, let's see how far that goes on. How's that working out for you? You see what I'm saying here?
You're lucky, Bill, if you get a month out without burning yourself out.
Well, that's the other thing. That's why I say be realistic.
Yep.
You know, you're not in your 20s anymore, which is not a bad thing.
You're
smarter.
No. Yep.
You know, and if you put that in the proper perspective, okay, you give yourself recuperation. Recuperation is key.
Yep.
Nutrition is key. Yep. Exercise actually is nothing more than the catalyst. It starts, you're lighting the match with exercise. You're giving your body a reason to regroup.
Yep.
Okay.
Stimulation, we call
right? That's it. And recuperation is so important. And that's why I tell a lot of people when they give me a routine, hey, what do you think of this routine, Bill?
Yeah.
Well, that's an awful lot.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if they're only giving themselves one day in between. See, I know guys that'll do an exercise once a week.
Yeah.
For example,
a
squat. Wednesday a squat day. You know, you listen to guys talk, today's leg day, and tomorrow is shoulder day. You know, stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah.
One day a week, they will do their squats.
Yep.
Put their gear away, barbells, what have you, and move on. When you're done with your routine, shouldn't take more than a half hour. When you're finished with your routine, forget about it.
Yep.
Don't dwell on it. Don't go back and say, well, you know, I still feel like I could do that. No. Have a little bit in the tank when you're done. This train till you know, absolute knockdown, drag them out. Vomit bucket exhaustion is crazy.
Yeah.
First, I don't think I would enjoy that.
No.
And if you don't enjoy doing something, you're less apt to do it. Or if you do it, you're going to go through it in a haphazard method. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just spinning wheels. You're doing it just to say you did it.
Yep.
You know, you're not giving your, you're not putting your heart in it. It's like you when you walk into your gym, and you're going to have days like this. You know, it's what do they call it? Biorhythms. Good days and bad days. Have you ever known anybody to bet on horses? Okay. Horses have good days and bad days.
Yep.
And when these guys are you know, scribbling on their piece of paper and they're looking at all the horses, they know which horse is up for a good day.
Yep.
That's the key to it, see? Or they get inside information. I never did that, but I knew guys that, you know,
had
bragging rights, so when they won a lot of money, they never tell you when they lost.
But you know what I know? Not to interrupt you, but you know when I know I'm going to have a good day? I know I got to go out tonight. When my hands are, like, big, and I mean, like, puffy looking.
Yeah.
And veiny, and they are like that right now. I usually, that's the thing for me where I'm like, all right, I'm going to be able to rip that bar off pretty hard because my hand's going to dominate that bar, I'm telling myself. So, you know, there's certain things you know. You know, I know like how I'm walking that day. I know how I am mentally that day. Now, that doesn't mean I've still gone out there and bottomed out. I'm not going to lie to anybody. It does happen. But usually there's certain things your body's going to give you on any day that's going to kind of tell you where you are. You know, if you feel kind of wrung out, you look kind of like, I don't have, you know, big feeling hands today, or they don't feel rough. And you know, those sometimes are things, but I've had that too, and I've walked in and I've crushed everything I touch. So you never know. That's my point.
Well,
you know,
it reminds me of when I was training in the late 60s, I had a muscles by mail trainer by the name of Chuck Sipes.
Oh, awesome guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's funny you bring that up because he would say that. He says, you're going to get to the point.
Yeah.
You'll know when you're ready to train.
Yeah.
When, and this is something that stayed with me for years.
Yeah.
When you know today is the day and you get up and your body wants to go to the gym.
Yep.
You just feel good. You're, of course, I was a kid back then. When you don't have any joint pain and like you say, your muscles, you feel like you could pull up a tree by the roots. That's how he put it.
Well,
like you could pull up a tree by the roots.
Who do they say that about? Was that Bill March? I think that's what the Russians said about him. It was either that or it might have been Paul Anderson. I remember reading. I can't remember which one it said. They were so strong and impressed that they felt that either – one of them could pull a tree out by its roots. Well, that's like another thing. It's like, you know, some days you want to really eat, you know, and it's like there will be days like I'm serious. And it's ridiculous because I know you're not grabbing a lot of it, but I need a lot of calories right now, especially what I'm doing. I'll sit literally. I'll make like 4 protein drinks, and I'm talking to like raw milk. It could be raw cream with it. It could be coconut milk, and, you know, I could go anywhere from a quarter cup to a pound, a whole cup of protein in it, and it's not whey either, I'll tell you that. And I'll tell you what, there's days, like, I can remember when they were talking about, like, Rio Blair when they were all hanging out, he'd make the drinks. I'll tell you, Bill, I would have been his best student. I would have sat there and drank buckets of that stuff. Oh. There's just some days I just love doing that, you know?
Well, you know, it's a like I say, with the pulling up the trees and the Russians, the Russians are probably referring to Paul Anderson. They absolutely loved him. I mean, there was, and you know, I don't know what it's like now, but back then, they took their weightlifting serious. And, you know, these guys were like rock stars, you know, the lifters and stuff like that.
Yep.
And they went absolutely crazy over Paul Anderson. And you got to know that was during the Cold War.
Sure.
Where, you know, everybody forgot about all the political nonsense that goes on. And and that's, you know, that's how we felt at the time. But as far as being ready for the gym, that was the thing. Now, if you're going to go train, now, even though it's been 2 days, let's say that you do the traditional 1 day of rest in between workouts, you know, the Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You trained on Monday, you had a great workout, you rested on Tuesday, and you were going to go walk in the gym on Wednesday, same time of the day, every day, let's say after dinner or whatever, and you just don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing you're going to achieve, and of course this was explained to me many years ago, is the only thing you're going to achieve encouraging the correct motor skills. In other words, a practice, like, kind of like playing the guitar. You know, how do you better the guitar? You keep
playing.
Well, that's all you're going to achieve. You're not going to really stimulate the muscles, you know, the joints and what have you, and endurance, of course, if you're doing squats and stuff like that. It's just not going to happen. So you better, if you're just not ready, maybe you should take another day off.
Yeah.
Well, who says you can't take another day off? You know, what the heck? Okay, so you take another day off. And you put it off till the next day. And then many times you will go in and you'll feel much better and say, now it's time to train.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
Like I say, many guys, I've talked to many of them, they all discover, and unfortunately it takes time, it's experimenting what your body will respond to. Some guys I have known will train every day. But it works for them. If the train's going in the right direction, why do you want to get off, you know?
Well, look, Bill, we're just about at the end of the show. Is there anything else that you want to add to this?
This is interesting, though, as far as we'll have to touch on it again sometime, as far as the physical, mental, and spiritual aspects of training. I know that the mental attitude, above all else, is extremely important. If you've got the right attitude, you can it's amazing what you can not only amaze other people, but more importantly, you amaze yourself.
Well, Bill, you know, the thing is, too, I mean, you and I have talked about this. Brooks and I have touched on this and a lot of the other gentlemen on the show. We got a crisis out there, especially with kids now, I think, in a lot of ways. And it's like, I know there's more and more younger kids listening to this show because Steve Helmicki, who owns a gym up in Buffalo, he's got a lot of teenagers. They're listening to it now. Some of my friend's sons and his friends are now listening to it. You know, I can't speak for you. I feel that I have, what's the word I want to use? I can't think of the word now off the top of my, I got it. I feel kind of like a responsibility in some ways, even if I don't know people out there, you know, they listen to the show. It's like, I want to try to give them an out, you know, like maybe things aren't going so good in your life, you know, or people are telling you can't do things. And especially with kids now, you know, it just seems like everybody just likes to beat people down. And I'm not saying everybody because it's not that way, but there's a lot of that going around. And most people are so media oriented now. This is the shit that's being, you know, laid out there. You know, we're the whole other side of that coin because, you know, I've had many things sent to me as recently as a few days back where people say, we love to listen to your show because it's so positive, it's aggressive. You know, you can learn so much where they're looking at other stuff they're listening to, and it's like it's more conspiracy oriented. And just, you know, the people just don't inspire. And I think that's a great thing, and I'm very proud of that. And I'm proud to have all of, like, yourself and all the other people associated with the show because, you know, they name names of people too, which is great. And that's what it's all about. That's why I'm here. That you know, I said to you before, I look at this show as like if I was that kid sitting there not knowing what to do, I sure as hell would hope that there's something out there that I can get my teeth into and I can really learn and go out and try for myself.
Well, it's important to listen and consider. Notice I say consider.
No. Yep.
Different ways of doing things and try them out. But if you are using a routine, have a method, and you've got it scrawled on a piece of paper, it's important to keep records because you have to know where you've been to know where you're going and vice versa.
Yep.
It's important to know that if you are on to a routine that works, don't change it.
Exactly.
And I've heard people say, yeah, but, oh, God, this routine is a killer, man. It's just, oh, it's just hard work. Well, that's where human nature is kicking in.
Yep.
There's got to be an easier way. Yeah, well, maybe there is an easier way, but you're on to something that is working. And like I said earlier, if the train's going in the right direction, why in the world do you want to get up? Oh, well, it's hard work. What is your point? Of course it's hard work. Why is it hard work? It's not only from a physical standpoint of view, but if you're taking Korean algebra or something, okay, it's difficult mentally. Yep. It's because it's taking you out of your comfort zone.
Absolutely.
If it's in your comfort zone, in other words, if you can press 100 pounds over your head and you go out every training day and you press 100 pounds over your head, and you go out again and you press 100 pounds over your head and you say to yourself, this is all I can press.
Yep.
Well, it's because that's all you're pressing. You've got to add a pound.
Yeah.
And if that works, add another pound.
Yep.
Get to the point where you can't press any more weight.
Yeah.
And then go back out there and press it again to the point where you add weight and then you progress. It has to be logical progression.
Yep.
And there's a infinite number of methods of doing it. We can go into that some other time, but
absolutely.
To inspire the youth, that's the most important thing. I can't tell you how many times people have contacted me in the 45 years and say, thank you.
That'd
thank you for making the publications available. Thank you for answering my questions.
Yep.
Thank you for pointing out exposing me to magazines like Iron Man magazine. I remember, I can't tell you how many times back in the day when Perry Rader was still publishing the magazine, you know, guys would, you could pick up a Strength and Health or a Weider's Muscle Builder on the newsstand.
Yep.
You couldn't find Rader's magazine. And I think I told you the story, how I stumbled across it. But anyway, you know, I would send out my catalog and there would be Iron Man magazine. Well, somebody would call me or write me a letter and say, what is this Iron Man magazine? And I knew right there, hey, this guy's in for a real whirlwind trip here when he discovers this magazine. And then, you know, they order a copy or I'll throw a copy in with an order, you know. They'll contact me and they said, wow, I didn't know this magazine existed. Well, there's the key.
Yep.
People have to be exposed to this stuff. You know, the internet is a great thing. It's profound amount of information.
Yep.
I mean, you can go through and you can find you type in something, you'll get a million hits. Okay.
Yep.
But the downside is it's not all accurate. Okay.
Yep.
It's not all accurate information. It's a variety of different points of view, and the thing is, what it does is it gives everybody a microphone.
Yep.
And this is not necessarily a good thing because there are a lot of people that are very negative.
Yep.
You happen to be very positive in your approach and your message, and that's important. When somebody comes to you and said, I'm frustrated with my routine, it isn't working, and especially if it's a young man and he hasn't been exposed to what I consider the result-producing, no-nonsense stuff. I don't cater to the bubblegum crowd.
Right, right.
And if the guy shows any sign of bubblegum, I straighten him out on that. I said, look, this is not you're not dealing with a guy who's going to promise you 24-inch arms, you know, be the first on the block and all that. It doesn't work.
Yep.
And that's the message you have to get across. And nowadays, there's a lot of kids out there that are faltering, and I think that that exercise of all kinds, not just barbells per se, but you have a great deal of information that can be put out there to people and on a positive note.
Yep, I agree.
And that's the important thing. And, you know, I have a wealth of authors from all, you know, and they have all different, you know, points of view. And if I can get them on the right track, then I consider I've achieved something.
Without a doubt. Well, Bill, why don't you give out all your information, speaking of writers and authors, and then I'll give mine and we'll speak briefly offline, if you would, please.
All right. My name is Bill Hinburn. I own and operate SuperStrengthTraining.com. I have for 45 years. I specialize in publishing, distributing strength training books and courses. Be sure to go to my website and sign up for my free daily newsletter. All you need to do is enter your name and your email, and you'll get a daily email from me talking about all different kinds of topics, inspiration, old-time strongman, training routines, etc. I also have a 24-page mail order catalog that I've published for nearly 45 years. Yep. I have worldwide priority mail delivery, and such names as Paul Anderson, Mark Berry, Alan Calvert, Anthony DiTillo, Herman Gorner, John Grimmick, Bob Hoffman, Thomas Inch, Bob Peoples, David Willoughby, Arthur Saxon, Bradley J. Steiner. Be sure to sign up.
Awesome. Has he got everything, Bill?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This is Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by U.S. Wellness Meats, Saugerties Chiropractic Center, Dr. William Wong's Essentials, and Atomic Athletic with Roger LaPointe. You can get a hold. Our websites are www.fiorellobarbellco.com, www.motivationandmuscle.com. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Write us a review. I'd be more than appreciative for that. Also, if you want to get a hold of me, if there's something you would like Bill and I to talk about, that's FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com, and I'm sure we can accommodate you on that. We're on iTunes and Stitcher, and I'm trying to think. I think that might be it. Just look for some new stuff coming. I'm not going to say any more about that. We're in the process of some very big changes for this company, so I'm very enthused, and we will let you know more down the road. Also, obviously, if I didn't say it in the beginning, Bill is on every other week with us, and I have to talk to Bill offline, but he'll be on if he agrees to it. He'll be on in early May, and we'll do another show. So, Bill, thanks once again for being on the show. You know, much appreciated and all that, sir.
Thank you very kindly, Eric. I look forward to hearing from you again.
Oh, yeah, I do too. So, for Bill Hinburn, this is Eric Fiorello. I want to thank you for listening to the show. It's going to be a tough week. I'll have this show up either Sunday or the early part of next week. We've had a few hiccups with things, so we're a little bit behind, but we'll get this thing up, and I'll let everybody know when it's out. So have a great week, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.